It is a victory edition. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush are with you. And Phil, you were the optimistic one last week. I hoped you were right, and you were.
Oh, that was so great. Oh, I'm sorry. I was still thinking about how great that game was yesterday. It was great.
It was a fantastic win for Marquette over the hated Wisconsin Badgers. And really, that's going to be the whole show in today's podcast, because Marquette does not have any games this coming week. So basically, we're just going to revel in the win over Wisconsin, maybe debate if Marquette has turned a corner or if it's, you know, should we get too excited?
Or Madison has gone into the toilet.
Yeah, there's plenty of ways to look at this game, Phil. But, you know, if you just want to break it down statistically, that was Marquette's best performance of the season. It was Marquette's best defensive performance of the year, an effective field goal percentage of 46.3. That is by far the best for Marquette this season. They only had one other game where they held the opponent below 50, and that was the Chicago State game. So, by far and away, best effective field goal percentage defense performance. Fewest possessions Marquette has had in a game this year, and they were still able to win. Obviously, Marquette being an up-tempo team, like to have a lot of points, a lot of shots, but they were able to play closer to Wisconsin's kind of score that they wanted, and they were still able to win. It was Marquette's best three-point percentage showing as far as field goal percentage this year, 63.6%. They haven't had another game above 50% this year.
That feels
so
really good.
Really far and away. Yeah, like I knew it was good. I didn't realize it was that good as I was watching the game. I felt like they've had some other performances, but they were just so efficient from behind the three-point arc. And speaking of efficiency, Marquette's own effective field goal percentage, 65.5%, that's their third best this year. They've had a couple other games. I think they had one game where they were close to 70. Let me see, I had it up here just a second ago. But bottom line is it was far and away their best showing of the season. Yeah, the Marquette's best effective field goal percentage of the year was LSU, actually. They were 70 in that game. They were 67 against Chicago State. And then the next two best after that were both this week, Phil, Wisconsin and Vermont. So all in all, nothing to complain about in that victory. Basically, that's the kind of team we were expecting Marquette to be this year, realistically speaking, is excellent offensively and good enough defensively.
Yeah, and well, and it was a great performance. It was kind of the week we needed after the Georgia loss, and you know, it had a real doom and gloom kind of feel, even though the team wasn't, you know, they didn't have a losing record like, say, a team from, you know, 90 miles west of Milwaukee. But it felt real doom and gloom, right? So even my being optimistic and saying we're going to get two wins, there was a little bit of, whoa there, fella, we're not feeling that good. And then both
wins.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, our last podcast was a lot of doom and gloom.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
For plenty of reason. I think that was the tone of the fan base.
Yes, correct.
We even asked last week, Phil, last week during the pod, we said, as bad as it was, how would you feel about if hypothetically Marquette won two games this week? And that's what happened. And now there are a lot of happy feelings going around right now.
Well, and I think it really has to do with, like, how Marquette looked in those two. I mean, the Vermont win was certainly a strong win, and the team performed well. They looked very good. Vermont is nothing to shrug at. It turned out they were probably, or not probably, they definitely were stronger competition than even Wisconsin was in Madison, which is just mind-boggling when you think about it, where Wisconsin's been.
Right.
As much as we hate it over the last 15 years, that's got to be devastatingly depressing for Wisconsin fans, and I love it.
Yeah, well, I think when we get to the end of the season, Vermont may end up being Marquette's best non-conference win, because, you know, Wisconsin, you know, according to KenPom, they are the best right now because they're at 53 in KenPom. But, you know, KenPom has Wisconsin losing a lot of games in Big Ten play, as you would imagine. And Wisconsin is currently projected to finish 15-16, according to KenPom. So they may get knocked down a little bit if they get beat up in Big Ten play and do not play as efficiently as they would like to raise their KenPom numbers. Meanwhile, Vermont, I think, is a team that's probably going to get a lot of wins in its conference and could maybe boost its KenPom rating. So right now, as we're recording this on Sunday night, you know, Wisconsin is at 60 on KenPom, Vermont's at 72. And like I said, those are the two best wins for Marquette so far this year. The next best would be LSU at 86 and VCU at 87. So two high-quality wins this week. And, yeah, Vermont certainly was nothing to sneeze at. And I think Wojo even said that after the game. He said, I just hope our fans understand how good Vermont is. And Vermont certainly was a great win. But the fact that they were able to parlay that and just take that momentum and go to Madison and just dominate Wisconsin, really. And yeah, this may not be a great Wisconsin team, Phil, but when you go on the road and just kill a team, and teams will like that. And really, the win was really never in doubt in my mind. Once the game started, I think the closest it got was six. And whenever Wisconsin got within six, Marquette always had an answer.
Yeah, well, and you know, quite frankly, I mean, if it weren't for the acting skills of some of the guards on Wisconsin's team, especially Davidson, I don't even think the game would have finished as close as it was. The free throw differential was literally the only thing that kept the score even remotely close between Wisconsin and Marquette. You know, Wisconsin may have struggled to score greater than 55 points had they not had a significant number of fouls called their way. I think the defense was adequate. But again, you can say, well, Wisconsin was down. They lost two players the day before. But again, I don't know that even with Kobe King and Trace in there, this is just not a good Wisconsin team, and Marquette, for whatever reason, is, I don't know if something changed after the Georgia loss, but they seem like they have a little more attitude, they seem like they have a little more swagger, and they're just playing a slightly more aggressive form of defensive basketball, and it's paid off this week in two great wins. You know, maybe not on a empirical, these were tough teams kind of standpoint, but if nothing else, from a psychological and fan base pleasure standpoint, it was some great wins.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think one place to start, I mean, there's a lot to touch on in this game, both as how bad Wisconsin was and how good Marquette was. I'm going to stick on the how good Marquette was side for now. And in that realm, a guy we were pretty harsh on in our last podcast, I think we need to praise in this one, is Andrew Rousey. I think in Marquette's two wins over the last week, I thought Rousey played much more under control. Now, he was a little out of control in the first half against Wisconsin. I thought he got a little too fired up, and he had some silly fouls. He had that technical, which he didn't want to do, and kind of got Wisconsin a chance to get back in the game a little bit. And then he got that third foul. But I think that was a blessing in disguise, because I think he got on the bench and really calmed down and played a great second half. And even in the Vermont game, I think what he had, like 10 assists,
10 assists.
And only one turnover. And so when Rousey plays under control like that, Marquette has such a much better chance to win when he's not turning the ball over. He's making good decisions, making other players better. He had two dimes in that game that were just terrific. One to Theo John in the first half and one to Jamal Kane in the second half. He got through traffic. And I've said in the past, I felt like every time Rousey gets close to the hoop, bad things happen. But he made some great things happen in that game, drawing defenders in and finding a guy under the hoop for easy layups. I thought Rousey played great, and maybe, you know, granted, it's just two games, but if you want a reason for optimism going forward into Big East play, maybe Wojo has been able to reach Rousey a little bit with that, you know, that benching for a couple games and getting him to play a bit more of a team game and get other guys involved and understand that he's a leader. And yeah, you can play with fire, but fire under control. And I think for the most part, that's what we saw from Rousey in these last two games.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like in the last two games, Wojo convinced Rousey that he's at his best when he considers his offense as the second option in the offensive set, right? Like, Rousey's shot will always be there. I still think he's struggling a little bit trying to do the thing too much. He was very much more in the flow of the offense. He wasn't forcing things in the second half when he kind of took over. It was largely because that's what Wisconsin allowed him to do. You know, it wasn't that he was forcing the point or going hero ball. It was like, well, geez, if you're going to leave me this open, I guess I should probably take those shots. Or, you know, yes, I'm going to drive the lane because you're attacking the 3-point line and it can get by you easy. And there's no one, you know, there's no one there to contest until I'm 3 feet from the hoop. So I think he's playing much more in control these last two games. Here's hoping it continues forward, right? Because even though that technical foul was annoying at the time, but that's mostly because I was neurotically nervous that somehow we were going to lose that game.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you always feel like something weird's going to happen at Wisconsin, but yes.
Right, but even that technical, I didn't mind it in the grand scheme of things, simply because I really loved Rousey and Howard having some swagger in Madison and just being like, you know what, we're good, we know we're better than you, and we're just going to do it. We're going to do the thing and call it a day.
Yeah, he definitely got under he definitely got under the fan skin. I don't know how much he got under the player skin, but he had to be irritating a little bit. And I've said before, Rousey's a guy who, if he's on your team, you love him. If he's not on your team, you just hate that guy, right? Like J.P. Mucura with Xavier. He's not on our team, so he probably drives you crazy. But if he's on your team, well, he's your guy, and you love and you just absolutely love him. So,
and what did those two guys have in common? They went into Madison and won and pissed everyone off,
exactly.
And it was fantastic.
Just absolutely love it. So I think sometimes, and this is probably a bit of an exaggeration, but I think as Rousey goes is kind of how the team goes sometimes. You can say, well, what about Marcus Howard? Well, I think Marcus Howard is great in just about every game. Like,
right.
Win or lose, like, you're going to get a lot from Marcus Howard. Marcus Howard has been absolutely on a tear lately. I mean, you look at his last few games, 23 in Madison, 34 against Vermont, 29 against Georgia in a loss, 33 including a program record 11 threes against Chicago State. So he is just on fire. I hope he can continue that into Big East play. I think you know what you're going to get from Howard more often than not. But Rousey can be an X factor sometimes because when he's getting it done like he has the past two games, Marquette's offense is really tough. And even when the defense is not up to snuff, you know, when Rousey's going and the offense is going, you're still going to be competitive and you're going to have a chance to win. It's when the defense is bad and when the offense is, like, not great, like, above, like, just at average or worse, Marquette's going to have a tough time. But, you know, the offense was really clicking. And, you know, the defense, I mentioned it statistically, Phil, earlier. You know, the effective field goal percentage, you know, per KenPom was 46.3, Marquette's best effort of the year. For those of you who, like, maybe aren't that big into the advanced stats, well, what's a good effective field goal percentage for a defense? Well, the best effective field goal percentage team in the country right now is Michigan State, and they hold people to 39.4, which is astounding. Like,
that's ridiculous.
Really good. But yeah, so that's what Michigan State averages. That's not one game. But say 43.6, hypothetically, if you did that every night, that would put you around the top 20 in the country. So that's kind of how good statistically that defensive performance was from an effective field goal percentage standpoint. Is 43.6 is, you know, I'm looking at the stats, Phil. You know a team that is actually holding teams to 43.6 on the season?
Oh, who would that?
Georgetown.
Georgetown. Oh, jeez. Well, yeah, because they're playing 300-plus squads.
Yes, they're playing, you know, Little Sisters of the Poor every night. But I was looking at a team that holds teams to 43.6, and Georgetown is one, and I just started laughing. So
nice. Well, so that's Patrick Ewing, so that he's got him on the right path.
Yeah. So I keep joking about it, but I think it might actually happen if they beat Syracuse. If Georgetown could beat Syracuse, they may seriously come to Marquette ranked in that first week of Big East play.
Oh, I would love that, you know, so much.
Because, you know, lazy voters just, you know, move a team up when they're undefeated if you're not actually paying attention.
Right.
And I think that would – most voters are paying attention and they know the schedule Georgetown's playing. But I'm just – because the thing is, Georgetown does have a game before that, but the new rankings wouldn't come out – like, say, if Georgetown goes out and loses their first game, they would still have that same ranking when they played Marquette on that Saturday. So, fingers crossed, Marquette will, quote-unquote, upset a ranked Georgetown team in the first week of Big East play. But getting back to this game, Phil, you know, for a team in Marquette that whose effective field goal percentage defense still ranks pretty poorly, it's still right around 300 in the country. But to have a, say, top 20-ish caliber performance from its defense, I mean, certainly outstanding. Now, if you want to poo-poo it a little bit, you could say, well, Wisconsin is awful, and you would probably be correct in that standpoint. I mean, you could leave a lot of those guys open for threes, and they're not going to hurt you. But that's part of the game, too, is knowing your opponent and say, look, we're just going to let them shoot because they're not going to beat us.
Well, right, and that's the thing is, you still have to. It's a rivalry game, so you kind of throw the records out the window, right? And weird things happen in Madison, and we only had one player, Matt Helt, who had ever played at Madison on the roster. So regardless of what Wisconsin's strength was at the time, that's a tough ask. And to go in and kind of, I guess I would say, deliver on what you should is a great sign, right? There is every reason that Marquette could have been more lax on defense, and they still would have won comfortably, right? But they were able to go in and play defense, and they played good defense against Vermont. They played decent defense against Georgia. So statistically, they're still, you know, kind of behind the curve. But maybe, just maybe, they're turning the corner a little bit. They're starting to get it. And quite frankly, you can't take away from a team because they did exactly what they needed to do. You know, you can't discount a win because they beat up a team that they should have beat up. Like, so they did what they needed to do. It was a great win.
Yeah, getting away from the statistics defensively, Phil, just watching what you saw in that game, something that certainly, I think, for anybody who was watching, just jumped out is, you know, they knew there was really only one way Wisconsin was going to win that game offensively, and that was with a huge game from Ethan Happ and having him dominate the post. And so, obviously, that was the focus, is they were doubling him all day. I thought Helt did a great job, for the most part, one-on-one, but he didn't have to go one-on-one very often because I thought the double teams were just, I thought they were very well executed, whether it was Sam Hauser or whether it was Sakar Annam. I thought whoever was doubling on Happ made it very difficult for him. Like when Happ caught the ball, say, you know, 8 to 10 feet from the basket, he was not able to back down Helt and get closer to the hoop. He consistently had to give it up and had to find a new way to get into the paint and get buckets. Now, he still got his. I mean, Happ was not, you know, totally silenced, but he never was able to dominate in a way that Wisconsin and he probably hoped he would be able to against a Marquette defense whose, you know, 2-point percentage, quite frankly, was pretty lousy coming in and still is not great. But I have to give the Marquette coaches and just the players credit because they were able to limit Happ and just not let – they never let him really take over the game and have the game that he wanted to and that the game that he needed to if Wisconsin was going to win that game.
Yeah, I thought it was great. They ran when they were doubling. They were doubling it on the weak side, assuming that Happ couldn't back it, you know, swing it out to the wing and then get it crossed back over. And that was the thing about where I say the defense is turning corner a little bit. I think if you watched it, you know, ignore the stats, but if you just watched it, their rotations were a little bit crisper. Everybody kind of knew where they needed to go and when they needed to go. And the number of times that Happ basically had to dribble backwards to get out of the double team and Wisconsin had to reset their offense was a remarkable number. And one of the things to tie to this, and it's something we haven't really mentioned to date, but we really should, Sam Hauser has just been a warrior, if you will, for this team. He played 36 minutes against Wisconsin. I think he's averaging something like 35 minutes. And to be running around doubling Happ, you know, he's played a little bit of a small ball center during the Wisconsin game. You know, to average 35, 36 minutes as a power forward and run around as much as he is, pretty remarkable work from Sam. And the defense has, you know, again, it seems crisper when you watch it on the screen.
Absolutely. Yeah, Sam was great. I probably don't give Sam enough credit for being as good defensively as he is. And you know, maybe he's not, like, great on the perimeter per se, but when it comes to doubling big guys, I thought he did an excellent job. And, you know, something that Paint Touches had just tweeted out a couple times, and it may actually be true, is that Wisconsin's failure to recruit Sam Hauser may be a bit of a turning point in this rivalry. Not to say it can't ever turn back the other way, but as far as to give Marquette some leverage over the next year or two, not going after Sam Hauser could prove to be a huge mistake by Wisconsin, because, you know, Sam is turning into a great player, and who knows what Joey's going to be at the next level. He certainly looks like a promising prospect. But, you know, if Sam was wearing red on Saturday, that was probably a much different game. And you could just so thrilled that Sam Hauser is a Golden Eagle, and he is turning into a guy who, you know, Marquette is going to absolutely need if they're ever going to, you know, if they're going to get back into the tournament and try to win a couple games in it.
Well, I think that was what was – I think the game on Saturday and the results and what you saw from the players on the bench or what players were on the bench and looking at the programs, I think the thing that Marquette fans should really take away is Wisconsin, much to our chagrin, has been very good over the last 4 to 5 years, and they've been – you know, historically, the window compared to basketball generally is relatively small. Basketball to Wisconsin started in 2000, but they've been, you have to give it to them, they've had a solid program for
they've been good for 15 years, so,
right?
Yeah.
And the last 4 or 5, they've been very good. But it's stark contrast where the trend lines of the teams are, right? So when Wisconsin was really good, you know, 3-4 years ago, you know, Marquette was struggling, and that was reflective in and I honestly believe this in some of the attitude of our fan base, and just being so down about the Marquette program. Was so much, it was not only was it that we're struggling and we got a new coach and recruits aren't there, but gosh darn it, Wisconsin's good too, and I hate this, right? And now in that 4 or 5 years, I feel like the trajectories have completely done a 180. They've completely reversed themselves. Marquette is clearly, it may not be going as fast as people want, but is clearly on the way up. And Wisconsin, man, you could project out forward, and this isn't a Wisconsin podcast, thank God, but they could crater here over the next couple of years. No one would. Just a bunch of old people thinking about how great things were.
Yeah, this is all right. So this is the only nice thing I'll say about Wisconsin in this podcast. You know, Marquette is actually their worst loss of the year. You know, they've actually played a relatively tough schedule so far. I mean, you look at the teams they've lost to. Temple is actually a better KenPom team than Marquette, as is Ohio State. Virginia's a great team. UCLA is very good. Xavier's very good. Baylor's pretty good. But the fact is, they lost all those games. And Wisconsin teams over the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, as you've said, Phil, they don't lose 7 games in that stretch.
And quite frankly, they weren't all that competitive in those games either.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of those games, I mean, obviously Marquette blew them out. You know, Ohio State destroyed them. The Virginia game, you know, it was a 12-point win, but in a Virginia-paced game, that's like winning. That's like you're losing by 40. You know, the UCLA game was close, but, you know, they had 3 players missing coming right off the China thing. And, you know, Xavier won pretty comfortably as well. You know, Wisconsin, this is probably the worst Wisconsin team since, if we're being real about it, Phil, since Soderberg, maybe?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at that roster, and yeah, I know, you know this is a, I made a comment similar to this after the Big Ten championship game and that late pass interference, but, you know, those two guards missing this game, it's important that happened because Wisconsin fans needed to hold on to that as the reason they lost.
Right.
Like they just need to, well, we were missing two guys, and that's why we lost. If you want to run that back with those two guys, you know, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's bring it on, because I don't think, you know, Trice and, you know, King might be nice players, but I don't think they make up 19 points. So that was this is not a good Wisconsin team. They can't shoot, and I think, you know, any Marquette defensive deficiencies, you know, were alleviated by the fact that Wisconsin is not a very good shooting team. Ethan Happ essentially had to do it all by himself if they were going to win that game, and he didn't. I mean, he couldn't. Who could, really? I mean, he was getting double teamed every time he touched the ball, because Marquette's, I think, Wojo's attitude had to be, look, someone is going to beat us other than Happ. You know, we are not going to let Happ score 35 points and beat us. And Marquette had a game plan for him. And, you know, I was talking with Alan Bukowski on Twitter about this. Don't be surprised if that's the last time Marquette sees Ethan Happ.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up because, Alan had a great point.
Yeah, so, you know, not again, I don't want to spend too much time breaking down Wisconsin things, so I'll get through this quickly. All right, so it's Ethan Happ's 4th year at Wisconsin, because remember, he was redshirted. So I am assuming he's on track to graduate this May. And if that's the case, he should do 2 things. 1, declare for the draft without an agent, see where his stock is. I checked his stock on some of the draft websites. I don't see him in any mock drafts right now, but who knows, that can change. Chad Ford has him as the 56th best prospect, so hypothetically that would mean a second-round pick, maybe, until European players might crowd that up and push him out of the second round. But it would behoove him to at least declare without an agent. He's got nothing to lose there. I mean, he's a fool if he doesn't at least do that. And then say if going into a fifth year of college, you know, he doesn't have the draft stock, and he, you know, get some feedback, say, we want to see more from you on this. We want to see you expand your range or whatever. He may not – going back to Wisconsin may not be his best option because, you know, I can say with some confidence Wisconsin is not going to win the national title next year. And I think he will – Ethan Happ's going to have options, whether it's going pro or looking at the possibility of a grad transfer. Because, and one reason I especially say that, you know, because I do follow recruiting quite a bit for work, and I can say there aren't that many impact big men in this 2018 recruiting class. And because of that, programs who depend on one-and-dones like Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, Arizona, etc., might be hurting for a big guy and might be in the market for a grad transfer. So hypothetically, if you're Ethan Happ and you hear, say, Duke or Kentucky's, you know, really hurting for a big guy because our top freshmen all went pro, wouldn't you have to look at that?
Absolutely.
At least consider it? And again, I know people say, well, you just want to see Wisconsin be bad. You're just trying to hurt the Badgers. True. True.
You're not wrong.
But what I'm saying is not wrong. I think anyone who is objectively advising Ethan Happ would tell him to at least look at his options. And if he looks at everything and says, I want to be back to Wisconsin for a fifth year, fine. But I'm telling you, the kid's going to have options other than returning to Wisconsin, and I think those other options might be a little more appealing. Well, so don't be surprised if that's the last time we see Ethan Happ against Marquette.
Well, the other influence there is it's not just looking out at what's outside of Wisconsin and seeing what positive opportunities he may have. He's got to be looking at what's coming in next year, what's on the roster now, and going, really? Like,
right. Do I have to do that all by myself? I mean, the pictures of Happ in the postgame presser, I mean, he just looked dejected. I'm sure he was, you know, pissed that he lost to his cross-state rival and whatever, but he did all he could in that game, and it still wasn't even close to enough.
Well, he looked rejected dejected 6 minutes into the game. Like, you know, I was watching with some Badger fans, and there a couple of them were like, God, he looks depressed, and it's not the game's not that far out of hand. I just think it's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting state of affairs at Wisconsin with Greg Gard coming in. He was kind of forced on the program. You know, Ethan Happ's really the only high-quality player other than Davidson, but his real skill is flopping. You know,
he's a five-star flopper.
Oh my God, he needs to head down to Latin
American
soccer
Howard,
because he's got a future.
That third foul on Howard was horrific. Like, I mean, the ball was out of his hand, and the guy was still sliding over. I don't know if it was Davidson that drew that charge or not, but I forget. But it was just awful.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Just terrible.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that, like, the officiating was – I can't say it was cooked in Wisconsin's favor per se. But, yeah, the officiating was just awful in general. The Davidson three-point that he got fouled – air quotes in a podcast, got fouled on, and he just – I was looking for the sniper in the rafters that took him out because it sure wasn't the Marquette player. You know, so it's remarkable when your second-best player after Ethan Happ is basically just getting points at the free-throw line because he's really good at falling down. It's not a recipe for program success, and – with Joey Hauser coming to Marquette, like you said, Sam Hauser going to Marquette instead of Wisconsin, you know, theoretically that, you know, eliminated Joey Hauser. Tyler Hero kind of looked at what was on the menu and went, no, I'm good. I'm going to go to Kentucky.
Exactly. I mean, he had to look at this roster and say, look, I might get 1 year with Ethan Happ, maybe, and look at the rest of this team, and then I could go to Kentucky or Duke and play with a bunch of five-star guys, and now he's going to Kentucky. But yeah, you know, I'm not necessarily saying Wisconsin is doomed forever, but it's hard to be optimistic about Wisconsin at this moment. Now, of course, they could pull off, you know, 10 out of 12 wins and be a surprise team in the Big Ten and shut us all up in a few weeks, which would be great.
Yeah, quite frankly, I'd love that. That makes that win look even better.
Yeah, but as it is right now, Marquette beat a beat a bad Wisconsin team on Saturday, but it doesn't matter if Wisconsin's 0-20. We'll always love beating the Badgers, no matter what. You know, Phil, I was listening to the One Shining podcast this past week.
Great podcast.
And actually, you recommended it to me. It was great, with Mark Titus, former Ohio State walk-on. He's funny, but he had some comments on Wisconsin last week. I don't know if you heard them. Talked about how...
Yes, I did.
Wisconsin notoriously plays with a different ball, I guess, in their home games. I'm just kind of trusting his word on this. And he said they also keep the arena cold, which I guess is conducive to shooters. I'm going to defer to the basketball player on that. He says it is. Okay. But if that's the case, they probably should have altered those conditions considering the matchup in this game.
They should have cranked up the humidity.
Yeah, they should have turned the heat up to like 85 in there if cold conditions help shooters, because
62.3%.
They don't exactly have any shooters, but yeah, I don't care what Wisconsin's record is, how bad they are, beating them is always satisfying because it uplifts the entire Marquette fan base, and it's funny to see how salty Wisconsin fans get about it. I think that's going to be a topic we're going to touch on here in just a minute, because we just revel in their tears. But and plus, you know, Wisconsin had – it's great for recruiting, too. Wisconsin had some pretty high-profile recruits on campus for that game, including Noble Days, who was a Marquette target in the 2019 class.
Yeah,
and they probably watched that game.
Greg Gard, what were you thinking doing that?
Yeah, I probably just had his blinders on and say, hey, well, this is probably our chance to get our best win of the year and beat our cross-state rival. That's probably what he was thinking. You're just trying to say, oh, yeah, we're going to beat Marquette. We always beat Marquette. Well, you don't always beat Marquette. Well, I think it's 4-4 in the last 8 games.
Right, and Greg Gard has not beaten Steve Wojciechowski at the Kohl Center. So, you know, we got that going.
Yeah, Wojo is – I think Marquette has won 3 of the last 4.
Yep.
In the Kohl Center.
Correct.
Yeah, that used to be a tough place to play. Not so much right now, so – But I going back to the UW fans, Phil, I do enjoy their tears.
Oh, yeah. Well, and enjoying, like we mentioned the swag a couple of times, I like this team having a little bit of attitude and a little bit of edge to it. And you know who does not like our team having a little bit of edge to them? Any Wisconsin fans. Who, boy, were they now online?
Classless.
Yes.
You guys are just classless.
Oh, my God. The M symbol is a gang sign. What? Like it's just.
What about your dirty dub?
Yeah.
Is that a gang sign?
No, because fine, upstanding individuals throw up the W. It's a bunch of tattoo people or throw up the M.
Thugs. Yeah. That's what they are.
Thugs.
Right. All thugs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Marcus Howard is clearly the most thug guy you could ever meet.
Just thuggish. That's what Marquette guys are. Yeah.
Yeah.
All those Marquette guys.
But
thugs.
Boy, were they like, man, they were just so salty about the whole thing. And it's like, I get that it's a rivalry, but man, have some self-awareness.
Right. One of my favorite comments was, congrats on your best win in program history. I'm not sure that's cracks the top 5 wins under Wojo. I think it's close, if we're talking top 5 wins under Wojo. There, as you mentioned, Phil, there was basketball played before the year 2000.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of it, actually.
Yeah.
there were quite a few tournaments that Marquette was in that time.
There's at least one of those things that Wisconsin's never gotten. Well, I suppose in 1943, when, you know, millions of people were fighting a war, Wisconsin got
right.
one. But, Wisconsin doesn't have a modern era or near modern era national championship like Marquette does. But, you know, this win over Wisconsin in Wisconsin, you know what was a more impressive win? 2 years ago when Henry Ellenson took the Marquette.
Exactly. It's not even Marquette's best win at Wisconsin under Wojo.
Correct. Like, this was which is what made the game so enjoyable, was this was much more of a ho-hum kind of win. Like, it still had the rivalry edge, but it was definitely like, yeah, these guys aren't good. This is great.
I put you on the spot here, just off the top of your head. Best win under Wojo, best 3 wins. I think the best is obvious, right?
It's the Villanova
last year.
Yeah, Villanova.
Yeah,
last
so that's
year,
that's
sure.
one. I would say beating Madison with
Henry
Nigel
Ellenson,
Hayes
that
and
was
Bronson
a tight
Koenig,
game. Yep, they had with Kaminsky, yeah, Nigel Hayes. That was their final.
I'd put
year.
That top three under Wojo, and I honestly put the Providence win that same year when Providence was a top 10 team, beating a Chris Dunn led Providence team in their place. When the, I think that was Marquette's like first win over a top 10 team on the road in like 10 years. So I think I would put all three of those under best wins under Wojo before this one. I mean, this one was relatively easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe this win may come into discussion for fourth or fifth. You know, I'd have to look at it game by game to refresh my memory a little bit. But those three jump out just off the top of my head as best wins under Wojo.
Yeah, it's not close. And I, quite frankly, this win, I maybe it's being a little hyperbolic, but I don't even know that it would crack the top 100 in program wins.
Oh, all time? No. especially if we get to the end of the season and Wisconsin's below 500.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't even be like a top 10 win over Wisconsin, I probably.
Yeah, somebody else did tweet like, oh, congratulations, they just won their Super Bowl. And it's like, no, it's a great win. I super love it, but there's about...
Oh, I love the hell out of it. But yeah, I mean, let's not overstate it here. Marquette went on the road and beat a team that was not very good. And hopefully they will have at least 10 more wins more impressive than that this year if we can get into Big East play. So that would be my hope.
Well, and you know what? Like, given this year, you know what win I would have traded for and I would have gladly taken a Wisconsin loss? If we had beaten Wichita State. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That would have counted for something. Beating Wisconsin is not going to count for much.
I don't know if I go that far. I love beating Wisconsin.
I do. I agree. Well, I mean, it would have been really hard to lose Wisconsin this year. So I guess it's not a fair trade.
Yeah, you know, you caught a little flack on the Twitter machine when you said, if you don't beat Wisconsin, shut down the season. I think it was misinterpreted. Basically, what you were saying was this Wisconsin team is so bad we can't lose to them.
That is correct.
To be accurate,
that is correct. And it was interesting to see. I mean, I'm usually very optimistic right leading up to games, and then during the game,
right.
I get super like, oh god, this is just I don't know what it is. I have this jinx complex. But I tweeted before the game that I don't see any way that Marquette that the game's even close, right? And there were a couple of folks that tweeted going, oh god, you know, anything could happen in Wisconsin. And then we went up, what was it, at the under 12 timeout, it was like 28-13, and there were a series of people going, yeah, my bad, I was wrong. like the game may have been out of hand at that point.
I do have a jinx complex myself. Like, I don't talk much smack before a game, especially on Twitter. Like, I never feel the mode to say, all right, Marquette's going to kick their ass today or something like that. You know, I just never feel like tweeting that out. No, I'll let it fly after the game. You know, I'll tweet my crying Jordan memes and all that
I did not know that crying Jordan went to Wisconsin in like 1985 and ended up on their program. That was good.
Yeah, how about that?
I didn't know that.
You learn something every day when you follow my terrible Twitter feed.
But, yeah, that's great.
But like quietly, honestly, before the game, after having watched Wisconsin against Temple earlier in the week, I'm like, man, Marquette is just so much better than those guys. Like, I was just coming into the game, I was oddly confident. I'm like, even though last week on the podcast I did predict that they would lose just because I was kind of down on Marquette when we recorded last, but you know, the more I thought about the game when it tipped off, I'm like, man, as long as Marquette has an average shooting day, they should beat these guys. And they had their best shooting day of the year and blew them out. But, yeah, I mean, the difference in the teams right now is quite striking. And, again, with considering who could potentially be leaving, and who we'll see what happens on the Marquette side, but and who is potentially coming in on both sides, I'd rather be Marquette than Wisconsin now, to be quite frank with you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if I was Wisconsin, I would hate myself, so that wouldn't be any fun. But, yeah, you'd much rather, like I said, the trajectory of Marquette looks much better than it does for Wisconsin right now. We're kind of passing in opposite directions. So it'll be interesting. And one thing one play that just boggled my mind and was a taste of things to come, I think, was the very large adult man block that Theo John had.
Did he look like the guy we were kind of talking about in the preseason, just talking about his size and physicality. When he stays out of foul trouble and is able to play aggressive yet under control, yeah, you saw it. That was a big shush play, right?
You know, yeah, like it got me jumping out of the couch. Like, I was so excited for it. It was amazing.
Yeah. More of that, please, from Mr. John going forward. I thought he didn't play a ton necessarily because I thought Held did pretty well, but I think when John was in there, he did pretty well. He may be starting to find his footing and, you know, as you see often with freshmen, get used to the pace of the game and maybe slowly start to eliminate that foul trouble that, you know, tends to hamper freshman big men quite a bit, you know, no matter where you are. So I
And I think he also showed some offensive game, especially in the Vermont game, but a little bit in the Wisconsin game that we hadn't seen to date. And even after the Vermont game, Wojo said something in his post-game radio show saying something to the effect of, yeah, it turns out you can play some offense when you're not hampered by a bajillion fouls. So I think hopefully that means, you know, if Theo can learn to play without fouls, that gives you another viable option down in the post. Heck, you know, and we'll talk about it in a future podcast, but when Froehling joins, you start to have a little bit more depth in big man depth that you may even in the right six circumstances play Theo John and Matt Helt together, or Theo and Froehling together, or Helt and Froehling together, right? You know, push Sam down to the three, which all of a sudden things get interesting in that regard, and you get a little bit more of a post present with some shooters, and the offense changed a little bit. So him coming along would be a very pleasant outcome of the last couple of games.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned it there. I mean, I think, you know, boy, time flies when you're ripping on Wisconsin. I know we've been talking about it for a while. We could probably do it for another hour, but, you know, looking forward a little bit, and again, we'll probably break down this more a little bit in our next podcast because Marquette has no games this week because it's finals week. Good luck, everybody. Study up.
We want everyone eligible at the end of the semester.
Yes. You know, make time to listen to your podcasts and whatnot, but still get those studies done. And then, and yes, the team as well, for sure. Make sure everyone is good to go for next semester. But yeah, so the team won't be playing any games this week, studying, getting some practice time in as well. And most important in that practice time, as you mentioned, Phil, is now Froehling will play in Marquette's next game. So, yeah, we'll probably break down those games a little bit more in our next podcast. But, you know, if Marquette holds serve and does what they're supposed to, as they are favored pretty heavily against both Northern Illinois and American, now we get to see kind of the complete Marquette team. And I'm excited to see what Froehling's going to bring. And, you know, now that we're basically, you know, we're almost done with the non-conference schedule, as long as Marquette can avoid a disaster next week against Northern Illinois and American, I'd have to say overall, you know, the non-conference schedule, both the strength of schedule and the results, I'd have to give it a solid B-. It's not something that you're going to, you know, run into, you know, go to the selection committee and say, look how great we were. But as far as schedule strength, it was great. Results, it was great, but not like outstanding. It's not like an incredible schedule, but it's very solid. And results, acceptable. You know, it's fine. I hate that. I wish they hadn't given away that Georgia game. You know, if they could have pulled, if that's the one you'd want back. You know, losing to Purdue, that's fine. You know, you always hate to lose at home, but Purdue's very good. Wichita State, they're top five in KenPom. They're going to be better. You know, when they get McDuffie back. They're going to be very good. So those are two losses you can stomach. Everything else, like I said, the only game I'd really want back is Georgia. Other than that, they got two nice wins. They got a true road win over a Wisconsin team that I don't know how many wins they're actually going to get in Big Ten play. They beat an above-average Vermont team that probably is going to do pretty well in its conference, I would think.
Yeah, I think they're going to be dancing come March.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll do pretty well in the America East. See, what are the KenPom has them at? KenPom has them going 13-3 in the America East. So I'm guessing they are projected to win that league. So, yeah, probably a tournament team. If, again, they avoid the championship week disaster that tends to plague conferences like the America East. But yeah, so, again, I would grade it a B-, Phil, based on combination, strength of schedule, and results.
Yeah, see, I guess, and this is where maybe I'll come off a little harsh. First of all, C's get you degrees, but I would put it at a C simply because I think they did the scheduling was outstanding, right? But they did exactly what they needed to do, the bare minimum to consider the non-conference a success, right? That Georgia loss does hurt. you know, maybe you make the exception that, you know, hey, Hanif leaving the team and some of the turmoil was there coming off Maui. It just kind of was a perfect storm of issues. And maybe if they could play that again now, they would, you know, and change the result. Maybe they would be more successful, especially coming off that confidence builder that was the beatdown in Madison. But yeah, I mean, they did what they needed to do. I don't, you know, they beat Vermont, they beat Wisconsin, they beat VCU. They got the increased strength, schedule strength with the win over VCU. They played tough for three quarters of the game against Purdue and Wichita State. So they, you know, kind of demonstrated they've got some ability to hang. They're maybe a player or two away that's not going to be there this year, but they've at least demonstrated some capability to be interesting and exciting. So I mean, I'm satisfied with the non-conference, but I think it's a C. They did what they, you know, the least they did the least best they could do.
I think that's fair to say. That's why I went B minus instead of a solid B. I think B would have been kind, but I'm satisfied overall, mainly because I'm coming off a high of beating Wisconsin. So maybe there was, I gave him a little extra credit for beating Wisconsin so soundly in Madison. So I'm happy with it. And then I guess we'll see how they do. I mean, hopefully no, we'll see how they look, I guess, against Northern Illinois American. Maybe we'll take a closer look at those two teams in our next pod. But hey, you know, Harry Froehling is finally going to be here. So this is kind of the interesting thing, just to touch on it briefly, Phil, is how he's going to be incorporated, you know, how many minutes he's going to get compared to guys like Helt and John, what this does for Sam Hauser position-wise. It's probably not going to affect him minutes-wise, but, you know, if he's going to be on the perimeter a little more, if say, Marquette goes with some big lineups. So, and you know, Wojo even said they interviewed him after the game, saying, you know, Froehling brings a skill set that really nobody on our roster has. So I'm excited to actually see that skill set for myself. And exactly what he's going to do for this Marquette team.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see. I don't, the Northern Illinois and the American game, again, both of those games are low ranked. And we'll get into it a little more next week's podcast, right? But those are the perfect kind of games where you try and work out the kinks with Froehling. I don't think Froehling's going to start in those first couple of games, but it will be interesting to see where they put him. I mean, we've heard he's kind of a shooter. Do you put him at maybe more of a stretch four and pair him with Helt and see how that goes? It'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to it. Those two games will give him a chance to kind of work through some kinks and start some, you know, because you can practice all you want, but until you start playing like actual competition that doesn't know what you're doing, it's difficult to really know what you've got. So, you know, we've got go ahead.
Yeah, I say if I were to venture a guess, I say he would probably be used, not skills. He's not saying he's as good as Ellenson, but I think he would be used similar to the way Ellenson was, as a power forward to pair with your big man, but also playing quite a bit of center with when your starting center is on the bench, either resting or in foul trouble. So I think he's going to get a good mix at the four and the five. And I guess we're going to see how those minutes are divided up. But that would be my guess right now. Again, I'm not saying he's as good as Henry Ellenson, to be clear. I'm saying he will be used in a similar fashion.
Yeah, well, and you would hope just from a wear and tear standpoint that this means it's not a demotion in any stretch of the imagination, but you hope this means that Sam Hauser can play fewer minutes, right? I mean, he's a great – if Froehling can chew up 3 or 4 minutes of Hauser's time – you know, right now he's averaging 36. If he can go down to 32 or 33, you know, those are fresher minutes that Hauser has. Maybe he's more efficient on the offensive end, or he's fresher on
right.
the defensive
bottom line
end.
Is, you know, right now Hauser has played 12% of the minutes at center. That would probably get closer to zero, I think, with Froehling in the lineup. I think Hauser would probably rarely, maybe never, have to play center for Marquette, with Helt, John, and Froehling all on the roster. That would be, I think that's kind of what you were getting at.
Yeah, yeah, to a certain extent. Plus the, you know, there's skill set that allows Hauser to maybe get a little, you know, you're not, if you take Hauser out, you don't have much in the way of someone who can play a true power forward the way Marquette is with, you know, kind of the stretch four. You don't have a good alternative there. With Froehling, you probably do. But, I mean, we're getting into the analysis we'll do next week. But, yeah, it's going to be great. And we got this week off to essentially bask in the warmth of the Wisconsin win and start looking forward to having Froehling. And then shortly thereafter, you know, some conference season starting. Undefeated, yeah, ranked Georgetown coming to the house. We got get pumped up for that.
We'll get. Yeah, Georgetown's probably not going to come in undefeated because they do have Butler before they play Marquette. So they're probably going to lose that one, but who knows?
Maybe they'll shock them. But then
they also play Syracuse. Good luck to the Hoyas against Syracuse on this coming Saturday, the 16th, because I would love to see Georgetown become ranked because it would amuse me and I would get a good laugh out of it. So good luck, Hoyas. We are all pulling for you, so Godspeed to you. Guys, we thank you, as always, for listening to us here on Scrambled Eggs. We always welcome your feedback. Anything you thought about the podcast that we discussed that you want to respond to, we welcome it. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. You can hit up the team handle. That's Cracked Sidewalks. You can also leave your comments on crackedsidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast. You can also rate us and review us. Please do that on iTunes. We love the 5-star ratings. Appreciate those. Leave your comments there as well. And we also have a Facebook page. If you're a Facebooker, there's a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. We post a podcast on there as well. Phil, let's just, since there are no games this week, we can just kind of continue trolling Wisconsin fans for the next 7 days.
Yeah, we have some breaking news. Marcus Howard has just hit another 3 in the Kohl Center.
Excellent. And he's been called for a charge as well.
Pat Driscoll, the worst.
Good for you, Pat. Till next time, seashells and balloons, everyone. Wisconsin sucks.